turning to news from the Holy Land, Israel's Defense Minister Ehud Barak has announced he will consider opening the Gaza Strip's crossing if Palestinian fighters there will stop bombarding Israel with rockets. Israel closed the crossing last June after Hamas took control of Gaza. Well, Catholic Relief Services' Tom Garofalo is in charge of the agency's operations in Gaza. He told me the violence between the Israeli military and Hamas over recent weeks has worsened already poor humanitarian conditions in Gaza.
Underlying all that extreme conflict, you have a steady deterioration in the quality of people's lives because of the long-term effects of the closure that has been in place since June 2007, when Hamas took over the Strip, and so the Israelis won't work with them, and as a result, the border crossings are closed. So, you know, you have problematic access of humanitarian supplies, but generally, humanitarian supplies get in. The big problem is, there is no export income now in Gaza, and all the export-related industries, which are pretty substantial, are pretty much shut down. So you have maybe half the people out of work entirely, and this has really strong knock-on effects on everybody's daily well-being. But really, Israel is letting some humanitarian cases out, which is very fortunate, because there are many things that are chronic illnesses and serious illnesses like cancer, which can't really be adequately treated in Gaza. So that is a safety valve for some people. But many of them don't get permits out for security reasons or other reasons. So even for those humanitarian cases, it's not easy and something that can't be assumed. Egypt also lets people out occasionally. There were a group of pilgrims that went for the Hajj a while back, and we really need much more of an effort by the Palestinian Authority, too. I mean, it's not just Israel. I think that inside Gaza, if you talk to people, you see that there is room for some kind of functional rapprochement between the factions on the ground. But each of them has their obstacles outside the country, whether it's Iran and Syria or even, you know, the Palestinian Authority itself, I think, doesn't necessarily do everything that it could to facilitate the opening of some of those crossings. And that's unfortunate, but that's the reality.
There have been some very weak signals coming from the Hamas side, it seems to me, over the past few days, that would allow people to be a little bit more optimistic that maybe they are willing to be talking with Fatah now, with President Abbas. Do you see a rapprochement between the two groups?
Well, it's hard for me to say as a person who, you know, doesn't really operate generally at that level of the leadership. You know, what we hear is that there have been these overtures, but both sides have really strong demands. You know, of course, the Palestinian Authority wants the Hamas leadership to give up control of Gaza, and Hamas has its requirements of the Palestinian Authority in terms of recognition and bringing them into what they consider their rightful position as the legitimate authority, because they won the elections back in January 2005. So there's still a lot of room between their positions. However, you know, I speak to a lot of people who are at kind of the mid-level of leadership in the Palestinian Authority and still present and trying to function in Gaza, and other sort of reconcilers in the community, whether it be in the religious communities or among just civil society activists who know people on both sides. And they describe a situation where this could really all be worked out. And so that's our situation. We just we hope for the good of the innocent and the poor in particular in Gaza that something could be worked out with the assistance of some of the big players in the region, like Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, United States, and Israel, of course. And I think that, you know, that's something that people are hearing from those countries. And, you know, there have been positive things. Egypt has tried to broker some kind of reconciliation that doesn't include, you know, giving in completely to the other side's demands or accepting everything that they have to say, but just to look at how we can get these crossings open, which is really critical for the good of the ordinary people in Gaza who don't really care about the political positions of these leaders. I think most people that I speak to are disgusted with the leadership on both sides. They think that Fatah did a lot of bad things, and they should have expected that there would be some sort of movement by Hamas And then Hamas, of course, they don't see them as justified in doing what they have done. And they did many horrible things in their effort to take over Gaza. So, you know, we try to focus on the ordinary people who are not firing rockets. Those people are making things much harder for everybody. They're not achieving anything. It's a, you know, highly immoral act. But most people are not doing that. They're just trying to get on with their lives. And we work with young people who would really just like to have some hope that when they finish their university degree or high school, that they would be able to have a job. And there's a very slim chance of that happening right now.
What exactly does CRS do there in Gaza? We know that there are more than a million people living in that very small strip of territory. And at last count, people were earning less than $2 a day. How are they living off that kind of income?
Well, there's a lot of answers to that. I think that what a friend of mine in Gaza said is that people are eating, but they are not living. And that's true, what you said. People, probably 80% of the people are earning, spending less than $2 a day. And without the massive amounts of food aid that are going in there, they couldn't make it. About 80% of the population are getting some form of food aid. I guess about 300,000 people out of 1.5 million are getting their full ration, WF, World Food Program ration of food. And another 800,000 are getting partial rations from the UN Relief Works agency, the UNRWA. So that's how people get by. But as I said, it's not really life. It's just subsistence.
I know you weren't there in the year 2000 when Pope John Paul visited the Holy Land. Have you talked to people about the impact that visit had on the people, the local, especially the local Christian community?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's something, it was really a touchstone for the Catholic community and for Christians in general, but it also had a big impact for non-Christians in the region. There are markers and plaques in the places where the Holy Father went and made remarks. Bethlehem University always features the words of the Pope when he was speaking at the Dehesha camp. And the Dehesha camp itself, which is a refugee camp in Bethlehem, they also were, I think, very touched and moved by the fact that the Holy Father would come to them. I think, sadly, the fact is that a lot of the hope that people had at the time of the millennium, because of the papal visit and other things that seemed, you know, things seemed to be going in more or less the right direction, didn't work out. And I think that they feel that a lot of the promise that the papal visit represented was unfortunately not borne out. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But I think, yeah, I mean, whenever the Holy Father goes to a place, especially the Holy Land, it has a huge impact. And I can still see, you know, when you talk to some of the priests that were present then, it's something that does lift their spirits, that they're not forgotten. And that's really important, that even when things get tough, and I think the Holy Father continues to speak out about peace in the Holy Land and the reconciliation, and that shows that they're not forgotten.
Tom Garofalo there from Catholic Relief Services in the Holy Land.